Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome to it, hour three of Old School on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Austin Orman with you as Jay Foreman is on his way down to Seacrest Field. Bellevue West versus Lincoln Southwest tonight, 7 o'clock, only on 93.7 The Ticket. That's kickoff. Of course, pregame will start at 6:45. The extended pregame will start at 6 o'clock. Myself and Tristan Gomes will sit down, take you through what's going on in the world of Nebraska prep football from Class A all the way down to six-man, 402-464-5685. Really appreciate everyone chiming in on our Sartor Heyman Jewelers text line. Jay beat me to the punch a little bit. I was going to talk about Big Ten Media Days here in this first segment of the 5 o'clock hour. I still think I'm going to do that because there's a lot of interesting stuff out of Big Ten Media Days yesterday. Did not tweet out a whole bunch about it. Didn't really sit down for the entirety of anyone else's press conference aside from obviously Fred Hoiberg and Amy Williams. But yesterday, especially on Thursday, was a really great chance to wander around and just stand kind of off on the periphery and listen to what a lot of the coaches in the Big Ten had to say. There were a few coaches that really drew a crowd. You look at a couple of the new guys to the league in Darian DeVries and Ben McCollum at Iowa. Darian DeVries had probably the biggest crowd, which wasn't overly surprising to me. Maybe Brad Underwood in that conversation as well. Two of the closer schools, obviously, to Rosemont, Illinois, the suburb of Chicago, where Big Ten Media Days were held. Didn't hear a whole lot from Darian DeVries. I mean, he was having a couple laughs, a couple chuckles here and there. Seemed like he handled the moment, met the moment just fine. Wasn't stiff, wasn't robotic, wasn't doing the coach speak thing. So I was pretty impressed with Darian DeVries. I was really impressed with Ben McCollum. That's a guy whose team's obviously, since he really burst on the scene last year at Drake, a guy that you knew about, you knew his name, but you didn't know much about. I'd never really heard Ben McCollum in front of a microphone. Didn't really know what his personality was like. And unfortunately, I think he's a really great fit for Iowa. I really do. I am not as high on Iowa as some other people are. And we'll get to that throughout the course of this first segment of the third hour here. But I was really impressed with Ben McCollum, you know, not knowing what to expect from him at the podium. Showed off his personality a little bit, right? He was laid back. He was comfortable. He was casual, having fun with the media members, you know, talking basketball, talking strategy, and something that he said and that Matt Painter said in the same, you know, similar vein was play your good players. In the context of Iowa, it was about Bennett Sturts, the point guard that came from Drake with Ben McCollum to Iowa City to play for the Hawkeyes. Ben McCollum was asked something along the lines of, you know, what's your backup point guard situation look like? Is the Big Ten going to be a step up so that you need to get a guy like Bennett Sturts more rest? And Ben McCollum said, no. And people ask the same question when I made the jump from D2 Northwest Missouri State to Drake. Then, of course, that same question was going to come up here now at Iowa was, you know, can you really take players from a level down and succeed a level up? And Ben McCollum says, yeah. I identify good talent. I identify guys that fit what I want to do. I put them in position to succeed. They go out, they execute, they play at a high level. And he, you know, made some coaching wisecracks about how, you know, Bennett Sturts will play off the ball sometimes. And because he doesn't have to dribble it up the court, that'll be a little bit of his rest. You know, maybe he'll get him a 30-second breather before a media timeout or some such. But it was a pretty simple theme, you know, that it's great to have depth. But Ben McCollum says there's times he's had five good players. And in that case, those five players are going to combine for 90 minutes or so. Sometimes he has six or seven. He said he felt he had six, maybe seven last year at Drake as they made the NCAA tournament. But Matt Painter said a similar thing when he was asked about Braden Smith. You know, does Omer Mayer, the Israeli product, come over and provide more opportunity to put Braden Smith on the bench, save his legs throughout the course of the year? And Matt Painter said, well, no. Why would I do that? Braden Smith, the best point guard in the country. If I'm concerned about workload, I'll just back off practice. Instead of going an hour and a half, I'll go for an hour and 20 minutes. You know, that's where we'll will save the legs. And I thought that was just a really fascinating sort of line to take for both those guys, because it's so simple. Play your best players more. The longer they're in the game, the more opportunities they'll have against other teams' second guys, against the bench units, against better matchups. And you should want better players on the court more often. Let's take that in context of Nebraska. Going to be really important for Nebraska to identify who its best players are early on. Depth can be a strength. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely, it can be. But there would be something to be said for a group of guys, whoever it is on Nebraska's roster, to separate themselves, that group of five to separate itself, so that Nebraska knows in crunch time who it relies on. I do like that Fred Hoiberg and his staff are malleable, that they are willing to go with the flow and say, hey, this guy's hot, this guy's not, this lineup is working, this one isn't. There's always some sort of tinkering and tweaking that needs to be done in the course of a game, in the course of a week, throughout the course of a month. But I do think it's about time for Nebraska to have an identity. And I think they've been starting to build to that, and I think they continue to do so. But I think that this team is a departure from the defensive identity that Nebraska's built up over the last few years. Obviously, the defense had to get better from where it was in Fred Hoiberg's first couple of years. Took a huge step in the right direction in 2022-23, leading into the 23-24 tournament run, and then even last year's team, which certainly wasn't perfect defensively, but absolutely had its moments and told you that it hung its hat on defense. But that's where, again, you think about identity. What does Nebraska recruit to? What types of guys does Nebraska get in the door? Let's go back to Ben McCollum. He says, you know what? If you're a point guard, the University of Iowa is going to be the place for you. You're going to come here and you're going to get better and you're going to find your way to the NBA. If you look at the development that they did with Bennett Sturts and plenty of guys on through the Division II ranks before that, that graduated, went on to successful overseas careers or moved up to the next level. He said, if you're a, you know, 3-and-D sort of wing, Iowa's probably going to be the place for you. We will get you simple shots. We'll get you easy shots. And we'll give you a chance to showcase your ability on the defensive end. And then same thing for Matt Painter, right? Who, yes, is rightfully, you know, as the, you know, the king of recruiting the Giants. He's done it successfully for 15 years now, really. I mean, you can just trace the lineage all the way on back to Robbie Hummel and maybe even beyond. You know, Matt Painter is known for recruiting those tall players, but guess what? He's also been really good at recruiting point guards as well. You know, maybe under the radar, he said. You look at Braden Smith, number 9 player in Indiana, number 33 point guard in his class. He said Jaden Ivey was more of an athlete than a basketball player when he recruited him, but was underrated. And then Carson Edwards, who Matt Painter, you know, obviously turned into a guy that everyone underrated for a while with how good he was in college basketball. No three of those guys, especially for Purdue, and Braden Smith, Jaden Ivey, and Carson Edwards look alike. Now, that's a testament to Matt Painter that he's been able to make it work. But why were all three of those guys so successful? It's because they had a running mate. Obviously, for Braden Smith, right now it's Trey Kaufman. Ran before that, it was Zach Edey. Jaden Ivey had a fleet of wings and a couple big men to pair with him. And same thing for Carson Edwards, kind of bridging the gap between those two. So, what was it, Ivy after Carson? I don't know. It all runs together. It would have been Ivy after Edwards. So Edwards to Ivy, then into Braden Smith now. What is Nebraska men's basketball's identity? I was talking with Wilson Moore of the World Herald about this as we were waiting for our flight. And shout out United. Actually sat next to Wilson on the plane. That was pretty fun. But what can be the recruiting identity for Nebraska men's basketball as they try to sustain the postseason appearances in a way similar to what Nebraska women's basketball has? You know, the idea for Fred Hoiberg for the last few years, the quote unquote market inefficiency, if you want to call it that Fred Hoiberg had capitalized on, was mid-major transfers. Derek Walker was obviously a high major transfer, but so was Emmanuel Bandemel, right, coming from SMU. Although that was technically before they were a member of the ACC. So you can count Emmanuel Bandemel in that if you want, but coming from the American, he's on the fence. But either way, you look at Sam Griesel transferring up from North Dakota State. You look at you know, the last few years, Rink Mast is in that boat. Bryce Williams is in that boat. Josiah Alec is in that boat. Andrew Morgan certainly fits the bill. Keisei Tominaga coming from a junior college, I think, is in that mix. So, yeah, Nebraska's pulled some power four transfers, right? Aaron Ulis from Iowa, Juwan Gary from Alabama, Braxton Mia from Washington, Raleigh Wooster from Utah. But those other guys were more the wing or the supporting cast, right? The main guys that have been the drivers for Nebraska have come from the mid-major ranks. Well, here's the problem. That advantage isn't really an advantage anymore. It's just kind of the way of the world. Maybe it was something Nebraska was ahead of the curve on a little bit. Not necessarily anymore. And Nebraska hasn't shown that much interest in recruiting the high school ranks, really only taking one, maybe two guys a year from high school. And not many of them stick around. I mean, Demarcus Lawrence transferred out. Yeah, I know he's back, but he's still left. Eli Rice was at Big Ten Media Days representing Penn State. Nick Janowski left last year, and Nebraska hasn't developed a big man that it's recruited out of high school. Now, as long as you have good players, does it really matter where you get them from? No, I don't really think that it does. But wouldn't it be nice if Nebraska was able to recruit its own players and be able to build that continuity over the course of 2 or 3 years to then, you know, pay it off with a great run? I still think that Nebraska is searching for how to get a foothold in high school recruiting, trying to figure out what kind of prospects it wants, because I don't think Nebraska can continue to just kick that can down the road and once every few years, you know, get a Braden Frager from in-state or see what comes of Sam Hoiberg and Cale Jacobson. At some point, you got to have some sort of a pipeline. Be known for something, right? If you're Fred Hoiberg, do you want to be known for always finding the next Monty Morris? Is it the George Niang, potentially? Is it DeAndre Kane, who I know was a transfer for Fred from Marshall those first couple of years that Fred's teams made the NCAA tournament at Iowa State? But you can't tell me, you can pin down what it is that Nebraska is looking for out of high school recruiting. They do so little of it. Maybe they do so little of it because it hasn't been successful, or maybe it hasn't been successful because they do so little of it. As long as they continue to get to the postseason, more power to them. Do what you got to do. But man, if you look at, you know, Nebraska women's basketball, how consistently they recruit from the high school ranks and develop. If you look at the best programs in the Big Ten consistently, Michigan State, what are they going to do? They're going to crash the glass. They're going to run. They're going to be tough-nosed. A lot of that comes from high school recruiting. Purdue, we mentioned, right? Illinois took a different track, but Indiana, when it's been at its best, has nailed the high school recruiting piece of things. I think Maryland's got enough talent that needs to be a recruiting, high school-based recruiting school, even under Buzz Williams. I'm just really fascinated to see if this get old and stay old philosophy is going to be what carries Fred Hoiberg through to his first NCAA tournament win and the school's first NCAA tournament win in Nebraska, of course. Or if there does come a time in the near future where Nebraska says, yeah, you know what? We do have to figure out what it is we want to be known for in high school recruiting. Because if you know the type of guy that you're looking for, sure, maybe it's easier to coach older guys. Maybe, but maybe it's harder to break them of some of their habits that they learned at other schools. Maybe it would be easier to imprint your own image and your own impressions on a high school kid who you get your hands on first and foremost. I think it's about time for Nebraska to dive into high school recruiting, figure out the type of prospect that it wants from the high school ranks and grow with those prospects, right? Supplement the roster. That's what Matt Painter was talking about. He said, you know, it's not that we don't lose transfers. It's that we don't lose starters, you know, and for Nebraska, they didn't lose starter transfers over the last offseason. They lost the bench pieces, but they also graduated their guys. So no, you didn't lose them to another school, but you still lost them. And you didn't have those ready-made replacements on the bench ready to step up into those roles. And again, not saying you expect anyone to be Bryce Williams in their first taste of action, or even Juwan Gary. But Nebraska doesn't have that pipeline. Nebraska had to go pull in some more people, you know, from the vortex to take a seat in Lincoln. And that's fine. That's what you got to do to survive. But Purdue has told you the way that they're able to do it is through high school recruiting. Nebraska women's basketball has developed a, you know, pretty consistent baseline through high school recruiting. Nebraska men's basketball hasn't done that. And I wonder what would happen to this program or for this program if it leaned more in the direction of high school recruiting. Now, why would Fred Hoiberg continue to do things the way that, he's doing it in the transfer portal? Number one, back-to-back NCAA turn or not back-to-back 20-win seasons and back-to-back postseason appearances have Nebraska in a better spot than it's been in a long, long time. Of course, there's plenty of buzz between the 2017-18 and the 18-19 seasons for Nebraska. And then the Isaac Copeland injury hits, Nebraska is not able to adjust, which is where you give Fred Hoiberg a lot of credit for making the pivot in the middle of that 22-23 season to playing more of Sam Hoiberg and that team really figuring things out down the stretch, setting the scene for what turned into the storybook year in a lot of ways in 2023-24. But I think about a guy like Chris Collins at Northwestern to illustrate my point about Nebraska. Northwestern has an endowment, you know, multiple times the size of Nebraska's. Northwestern has more money than Nebraska does. They don't use it. Chris Collins is still on a, you know, relative to the size of the overall budget at Northwestern. Chris Collins is operating with pennies. It's a shoestring budget for him over there. What's kind of been the cycle for Northwestern? They've really never bottomed out under Chris Collins. Have a couple tough years in there where they'll go a handful of games under 500 in conference play, be pesky, hang around, maybe steal one. But that happens for 2 years, and then they pay it off for 2 years. But in those 2 years where you're being led by the upperclassmen, your Brooks Barnheisers, your Nick Martinellis on down the list, in those 2 years where you're relying on your four, five, maybe six upperclassmen, juniors, and seniors to carry the day, you have freshmen and sophomore reinforcements behind them that are learning, that are getting, you know, ingratiated into your culture, that are learning what it's like to play for that program. So then, you know, maybe the seniors leave and those freshmen and juniors or freshmen and sophomores aren't quite ready yet. Well, give them a couple years of time on the court, and then by the time they're juniors and seniors, they'll be good, right? Chris Collins doesn't have the 2 year, you know, class into the next 2 year class. It's really a 4 year cycle of two on and two off for him. But I think he can get away with that because he feels like he has job security. Even at a place like Northwestern, where there has been so much turmoil in, you know, quote unquote, the front office, right, in the athletic department, even at the president's ranks, Northwestern basketball probably isn't ahead of Northwestern football in terms of cachet, that university, but it might be now. You know, Northwestern had one successful era, one and a half successful eras, and this is probably the golden age of Northwestern basketball under Chris Collins. Doesn't feel like his seat is warm, feels like he's there, he's done a good job, got Northwestern the first tournament win in program history. But I wonder how much of Chris Collins and his willingness and ability to recruit the high school ranks comes from him feeling like he doesn't have to explain every decision, doesn't have to explain every loss, feels comfortable and confident that he has the support of his athletic director or some superior. I'm not saying Fred Hoiberg doesn't. I'm not saying that the Troy Dannon is just the only football guy that questions whenever the basketball team loses a game. No, I think Troy Dannon is more knowledgeable than that. But I do think it's true, and I think it's been proven, that Troy Dannon's reputation is one of football first. And again, without knowing Troy Dannon's day-to-day, the easy temptation for a quote-unquote football first GM would be to take the surface level for men's basketball and women's basketball and sports outside of football, where maybe you ask some questions of your coach that come off a little leading, that come off a little, well, what have you done for me lately, whether or not you intend it that way. If Fred Hoiberg truly felt he had the full unwavering support of Troy Dannon, that there was no reason he had to look over his shoulder, would he be more interested in recruiting high school players? I don't know. Again, I'm not going to say Fred Hoiberg's not supported. I know for a fact they don't have the biggest budget in the Big Ten. They have the budget that gets them the players that they have on the roster right now. That's a lot of pressure on Fred Hoiberg to make it work. And that's why I like this team, because I think it you know, scratches a few more of the itches that Fred Hoiberg has on offense, stuff that he wants to run maybe than the last couple teams did. But if Troy Danan's focus is going to be football, what are those, you know, quarterly or semi-annually check-ins like? Does Fred Hoiberg feel like he has the full support of his athletic director to maybe go through a couple rough years where you're just above 500 and you make it to the crown and that's it? But would he be willing then to, you know, take those lumps with a freshman and sophomore class, and then by the time they're juniors and seniors, there's been the groundwork laid that, yeah, see, I told you it was going to be worth it. I have my finger on the pulse in recruiting. I know what I'm looking for out of the high school ranks. So, okay, maybe it's rough for a couple years, but you've seen that I can build to this. If Fred Hoiberg, all he wants to do is recruit the transfer portal and he can continue to find plug-and-play guys, more power to him, so be it. But I do wonder just how truly supported Fred Hoiberg at the end of the day feels, and if there was any way for Troy Danan to give Fred those reassurances that, hey, 1 or 2 years where you don't make the postseason, as long as you're still building the program forward and building out that high school recruiting infrastructure, I think that could take this program a long way. I don't know if it ever happens. I don't know if it needs to happen. That's just a thought from this side of things. We'll be back. You have more comments and questions on our Sartor Hamann Jewelers text line and our Honda of Lincoln hotline. More of Old School after this on The Ticket.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Rolling right along through Old School here on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Brought to you in part by our friends at the Lincoln Children's Museum. Obviously not a home game for a couple weeks now for Nebraska, but if you are looking to attend the Nebraska Northwestern game and don't know what to do with your kiddos aged 5 through 12, the Lincoln Children's Museum has you covered with their game day play dates. While parents enjoy the game inside Memorial Stadium, the kids get their own game day experience from our friends at the Lincoln Children's Museum. Drop-off is 90 minutes before the game. You pick up your child 60 minutes after the game. And while you're cheering on the Huskers, the kids enjoy fun activities involving science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, all centered around the theme of football and getting active. It's affordable, it's convenient, and it's just steps away from Memorial Stadium. If you're interested in signing your child up for a game day play date, go to LincolnChildrensMuseum.org. All right, to our Sartor Hamann Jewelers text line we go as we continue this discussion, kind of a big picture one surrounding Nebraska men's basketball. Let's go to 3203. It says, Eli Rice leaving was kind of a head scratcher. If he would have stayed at Nebraska, he'd be a junior right now and would move into the same role that Bryce Williams had. Same body type, same fit. Similar body type, would have needed some more refining over the course of the last couple of years. I think Eli Rice is probably a little more naturally explosive than Bryce. I think he's a little choppier, a little more sudden as an athlete. Bryce Williams had a natural smoothness and calmness to his demeanor and his game that maybe Eli Rice has grown into or could grown into. That's a guy that I think was unfortunate for Nebraska to lose. I don't know if he would have been the Bryce Williams replacement, but I do think Eli Rice leaving was a part of the reason that Nebraska ended up going to get Bryce Williams. And that speaks to even a bigger issue, I think, in some respects with Nebraska men's basketball when it comes to high school recruiting. It's just the complete and utter lack of ability to hold on to the guys they recruit with any sort of consistency. And I have no idea why it is. And there's probably not one reason. It's probably not entirely a Nebraska thing. It's probably not entirely on the players, right? And you think about Eli Rice leaving. You think about Nick Janowski leaving. It just leads you to wonder why. Was Nebraska selling them a bill of goods that they got to campus and they're like, oh, this is not what I was promised. This is not what I was told. Don't believe in this vision anymore. I saw that it's going to be different, so I'm out of here. Is it a lack of patience where Nebraska was true to its word? It was putting in that developmental work, but these guys think that they're good enough to get on the floor early, and so they hit the road and say, you know what? I appreciate it. It made sense at the time, but I think I'm better than this now. I'm going to go somewhere else where I can play. I really don't know what the issue is for Nebraska when it comes on to holding. Okay, so Eli Rice was already here as a true freshman when Bryce was a junior. Good call, 3203. So yeah, that would have been the perfect guy, I think, for Eli Rice to to learn behind, or even Juwan Gary for another year, right? I think Eli Rice would have been a rotation piece for Nebraska last year. I think they could have used him in his athleticism. It seemed as a freshman, Eli Rice was a little disinterested in the defensive side of the ball. Maybe some of that was he was swimming in it and just wasn't as good at it, you know, because he was a freshman. Maybe some of it was the disinterest. And he thought he was just going to be a bucket getter type of guy. I don't think Eli Rice ever would have developed into a Juwan Gary level defender. But man, if he puts in a little bit of effort, he certainly didn't lack for confidence on the offensive end. So I think losing him was unfortunate, but shouldn't have killed Nebraska. Losing Nick Janowski, we'll see. But those are two guys that I just really wonder what those conversations were like in the recruiting process, what sold them on Nebraska, and then throughout the course of their redshirt years, what about their mindset or Nebraska's messaging changed enough that made them want to be out the door and leave for what they thought were greener pastures? I really don't know, but Nebraska just hasn't held on to many of those promising freshmen. So maybe Nebraska is doing the right things in high school recruiting, and then something changes once they actually get here to Lincoln and on campus. It's just fascinating to see how few of those guys have stuck around Lincoln. 9079, it's reported Nebraska basketball's bottom quarter in the league in terms of NIL money. Would it make any sense to not carry a full scholarship roster and have one or two scholarship spots open so that there's more money available for your scholarship level guys? Interesting thought. It is. And this is probably more of a philosophical debate. I don't know if there's a right answer. I think there are some coaches that would tell you that, no, we got to carry full scholarships, right? We got to carry the 15 that we are allotted because of optics, right? What kind of Power Four school, you know, do we look like if we're not running a full roster? We have the money, we have the resources. So yeah, let's fill out the roster. And the reason that we're going to do that is maybe offering scholarships to those guys at the bottom of the roster is a way to improve your team in terms of, yeah, we can get maybe a higher quality guy on scout team to give our starters a little bit better look than they could get if we left that roster spot or scholarship spot open. Or maybe you hand out a scholarship as a reward, right, to a scout team player who's paid his dues or her dues on the women's side. And you say, hey, we wouldn't be here without you. You've put in the work. You've grinded for it. You're just as much a member of the team. We'd love to reward you with a scholarship. I think that would be the argument you get from a lot of coaches, but maybe there are those coaches that say, you know what? Really, when we think about it, at the end of the day, we only play 10 guys. The bottom of the roster, if we were able to hold on to players for a couple years or a few years and develop them, great. But year over year, it's really going to be those top 10 guys and maybe even just the top 8 or 9 guys that move the needle for us. So we trust those guys to carry us through every year. Let's maybe save some money on scholarships. Let's maybe save some money on the bottom of our roster when it comes to revenue sharing and just divvy that money up among the top, you know, probably 7, maybe 8, potentially 9 or 10 guys. I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I think that's just however you were raised philosophically, or maybe it's whatever's available to you in your position. When it comes to Nebraska, I don't know if I have the right answer. I do believe that Nebraska is toward the bottom in terms of NIL. I think Nebraska is probably in line when it comes to rev sharing among its men's basketball program at the very least. And I do think that there'd be an argument both ways for Nebraska. You know, maybe Nebraska does have to be a team that survives on depth. Maybe Nebraska won't consistently recruit or develop the next franchise player, I put in quotes. But maybe Nebraska can throw waves of guys at the problem and they'll have enough bodies that there'll be a rotation that works for one game. Or maybe Nebraska's closer than we realize to getting some more top-end talent out of the transfer portal or out of high school. And all it would take would be, you know, a slight bump in the monetary realm. So maybe there are years that you do sacrifice that 15th scholarship spot. You claim a walk-on, and then you say, yeah, we're going to divvy this scholarship money up to this player. Or maybe you go with 13 guys on your roster on scholarship, and then you say, yeah, I mean, we can give 2 scholarships worth or 2 portions of rev share money to get this guy that we feel really confident in being a difference maker for us. I think it's an interesting thought, and I'm curious to see how schools and coaches handle that moving forward. Then on to 8438. He says, you're making me think of a broader topic. Where does development happen now for all sports? 8438 says, I see more and more coaches put a team of talented athletes together and capitalize on it. What level are athletes being taken from good to great through development? Is it more on the athlete? And at the college level, are some schools still developing talent and others effectively using the portal? Yeah, that's a lot. There's a lot to break down there. So let's go one at a time. Where does development happen now? Depends on what sort of development you're asking about and the player. You know, some form of development should be happening at every level. When you think about elementary and middle school levels, it should still be learning the rules, should still be learning how to handle the basketball, how to dribble. It should be the basis for good footwork when you shoot and making the right pass and learning the basics of what makes a successful offense and a successful defense. At the high school level, yeah, of course, it depends on where you're at, but that's where you can get into maybe some more of the skill work, but not forgetting the basics, right? I still think you teach the basic team game elements more than anything in high school. Say, hey, we're going to learn to play basketball the right way, at least if you're with your school team. And then if you have a trainer, if you have time in the off season, if basketball is your full-time deal, that's when in the high school ranks, you can get with a trainer, you can get with a program and get working on your individual game. And then college, right? That's where some guys are going to go to the next level. Some guys will max out here. The development happens, I guess, in waves in some ways, right? They have more time with the players in college basketball now than they have with their hours over the summer. And obviously now with fall practice opened up, that's massively expanded. But still, I think most of the skill development, whether that's, you know, maybe you're a good standstill shooter in high school, how do you become a good movement shooter? Maybe you were the fastest guy on the court in high school with the ball in your hands, but how do you break a defense down in college? Maybe you could bully guys in the post in high school. Where do you find a second post move? Where do you find a counter and then a counter to your counter? I think a lot of that development ends up happening in the summer, whereas development of the mental part of the game, learning more about how to become a good defender, especially in a team concept, stuff like that, that happens in the context of, you know, the season itself as you go, learning the game plan, right? That's still development. And I think more importantly than anything, it's important to recognize different light bulbs come on at different times for different players, right? For some players, it's going to click very early on in middle school. Yeah, I have great shooting mechanics. I have great shooting rhythm. I found that kinetic chain that makes sense. Maybe for others, the mental part comes on. Yeah, I really get the theory of what makes good offense, but I got to grow into my body. I got to get stronger. You know, for some people, let's say that there are those, you know, three different light bulbs, right? The basic level of understanding of the mechanics of the game, then the next level of, yeah, I can run a scheme, and then probably at college where you're blending the two of those together effectively. Different light bulbs come on at different times for different guys, depending on when they pick up basketball, depending on the coaches they had, depending on what other sports they focused on, how much work they put in on their own, just their natural aptitude and ability to learn. So there's no one cookie cutter answer to say this part of development happens at this level for every player. You can generalize, but development of different sorts happens everywhere. So we have to be careful about what type of development we're asking about. And then even once we know what kind of development we want to know about, we have to understand the context of where this player came from, how they operate, what their background is, and then that'll get us more of an answer. And then 8438, somewhat thinking with the walk-on programs going away, how do you not lose that walk-on talent? You do, in a lot of cases, end up losing that talent, right? For some guys, it's going to be worth it to stick it out at the Division I school. They can say, yeah, you know what? I was a member of a Division I basketball team for 4 years. No, I didn't see the court outside of senior day or garbage time minutes, but that's what I wanted to do. Now I got a good degree. I was in the program I wanted to. I made connections, and it really set me up for my future. For other walk-ons, it's going to be, yeah, I can say that, you know, I did walk on. I was good enough to make the team, but I wasn't going to play. I really wanted to, you know, academics were whatever for me. They're important. It's probably going to be what's going to carry me through, but I can get this degree anywhere with a relatively high degree of certainty. So it was more important for me to, you know, play and stretch myself, challenge myself on the court instead of sticking it out just to ride the bench somewhere else. Again, there's no right or wrong answer necessarily. It's a situation by situation basis. But that's where, you know, are you going to offer the 15 scholarships so you don't have walk-ons? Are you only going to offer 12 or 13 to spread that money around? It all remains to be seen. And I think Nebraska basketball and plenty of other schools are still searching for that right answer in a day and age where there's not a whole lot of consistency in the rules. Let's get to this from Cornhusker Viceroy on YouTube before we go to break and wrap up old school. Says, I think Coach Hoiberg needs to make the point center his bread and butter in recruiting, the Derek Walker and rink mask type. Yeah, but then you can't stop there. You know, if that's what you want to do, if that's going to be your niche, incredible, right? If you can find those unicorns, probably from Europe more often than not, I think Nebraska thinks Leo Curtis can develop into that. I mean, Fred Hoiberg was high on Leo Curtis, and Rink Mass was kind of speechless for a second as he thought about how to describe the summer that Leo Curtis has had coming to Nebraska. That's a guy I think Nebraska would be wise to hold on to. Had a little bit of a recruiting battle for him out of Iceland. If point center is going to be the archetype that you know how to recruit, fantastic. Go get those guys. But, you know, was Nebraska ever seriously in the race? Did Nebraska ever reach out to Yaxel Lendeberg from UAB? Like, that's the quintessential type of guy that Nebraska is going to need. You know, was Nebraska ever in contact with? Did Nebraska ever reach out to a player like Robbie Avila when he went from Indiana State to St. Louis with Coach Schertz? And those are two, you know, pie in the sky sort of examples, right? Don't get me wrong. You know, Avila and Schertz have a really tight relationship. It would have taken a lot to pry him away. Lendeberg was focused on the NBA draft, and hard to blame him for going to Michigan the way he did. But those are the type of, no doubt, difference makers that Nebraska is going to have to get, and it can't stop there. What sort of players operate best around those guys? Some of that's going to come down to personality, but if you're going to have a point center, you better have guys that are good at shooting off movement. You better have guys that, Fred Hoiberg mentioned this when he was on set with the Big Ten Network and has mentioned it plenty of times since he's been at Nebraska. People talk about the shooting with Keisei Tominaga from long range, but Fred noted that Keisei Tominaga was second in the Big Ten in two-point field goal percentage in the tournament year because his timing, his pace, and his creativity was incredible in the lane. And Nebraska was able to spread the floor around Rink Mass and even Derek Walker the year before that a little bit to create layup opportunities. So if the point center is going to be the guy that you identify, you got to go get movement shooters. You got to go get one pick and roll partner for that guy so your point center can still roll to the basket just as that changeup. And then you need extremely high IQ basketball guys that don't have to be taught the mechanics of cutting, that don't have to be taught the timing of cutting, that are just basketball players, right? Your lunch pail guys. And I know that might sound, again, a little reductive, a little basic, but more than anything, that's what led to Nebraska's success at the rim. It wasn't the pick and roll lobs. It wasn't the brute force finishing. It was the fact that the floor was so well spaced, and Keisei Tominaga had that impeccable connection with Derek Walker and then with Rink Mast, three extremely high basketball IQ players that had such a great feel for the game. And this is something that I definitely want to talk more about as we inch closer to Nebraska versus BYU coming up on Saturday the 18th. Is, you know, if Nebraska, like this year, is not going to be singularly talented athletically, Nebraska needs to get to a place where skill and smarts can win out. And that means finding ways, even when you're at an athletic disadvantage, to manufacture paint touches, to manufacture drive and kicks into extra passes, into open threes, even against long athletic defenses. It's not easy. It might be simple. It's certainly not easy. And I'm curious to see if this Nebraska team can reach that point that I think it needs to have consistent success on the offensive end this coming season. We'll go to break. We'll wrap up Old School, get you set up for our high school football preview show. Myself, Tristan Gomes, sitting down for 45 minutes ahead of pregame coverage from Nick and Jay at Seacrest Field. That's coming up next here on The Ticket.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wow, really great discussions on Old School. I'm not surprised. Y'all are great on our Sartor Heyman Jewelers text line, 402-464-5685. Nebraska men's basketball picked 14th in the preseason poll. I think that has more to do with the state of the Big Ten, more so than anything about Nebraska. But it's the world Nebraska lives in. It's an uphill climb, really, for Nebraska. Just going through it really quickly here. Purdue, number one, got 25 out of 28 first place votes. Not at all surprising. They'd be my pick to win the league. Michigan at number two. Makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of talent there. I'm not completely sold on the fit that Dusty May has. He made it work last year. But man, there's some more fit questions for me when it comes to this version of the Michigan roster. So Michigan will be good. They certainly have their flaws. I think the biggest of which will be their ability to shoot basketball. UCLA, I really like. I think they brought back all the pieces they needed and added probably a top five player out of the portal in Donovan Dent. Illinois fascinates me. A lot of international flair and flavor there. Older team with professional experience. I think they'll be pretty good. Then we get into this kind of jumbled middle tier that I really, honestly, truly believe stretches all the way down to Nebraska, probably at number 14. You have Oregon at number five with probably the second best duo in the league in Jackson Schellstad and Nate Biddle. Michigan State at six. I think that's a little high, but maybe I should know better than to doubt Tom Izzo. Wisconsin. Yeah, probably about right for them. I don't love their team by any stretch of the imagination, but it won't be bad. Iowa at eight is an enigma. Again, a team that brought in a lot of interesting pieces, and I really respect their head coach. Will it all click in year one? We'll see. Ohio State, really like the talent, really don't like the coach. That fascinates me, some of their rotations. I don't think Ohio State's overly deep. I think they're five and a half players deep. Then you get to Indiana, who's making a lot of the same bets that Nebraska is in terms of the shooting, but Indiana will rely more on Tucker DeVries, whereas Nebraska will rely on rank mass. Number 11 is Washington. Sneaky, interesting roster up there in the Pacific Northwest. Washington will not be a pushover. I think they'll be better this year. USC and Maryland are transfer portal grab bags. I would have had USC a little bit higher, Iowa a little lower. I would pick Nebraska over Maryland right now. Not a huge fan of what's going on at Maryland. Northwestern has one dude in Martinelli. Minnesota is probably a year away. And you get to Rutgers and Penn State that have two of the worst rosters in Power Conference basketball. It's going to be atrocious in Happy Valley and Piscataway, New Jersey. So more to come in terms of Big Ten basketball preview. We'll talk more Nebraska-BYU next week. Huskers 8 days out from the scrimmage. We're just an hour away from kickoff at Seacrest Field between Bellevue West and Lincoln. Southwest, we got our high school football preview show leading you up to kickoff right here, 93.7 The Ticket, ticketfm.com.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.